please consider calling into the show today. We have a number of hot topics, and your voice needs to be heard. Thoughts, Love, and Reflections is your opportunity to make sure your opinion is heard over the noise of the media. James T. Deshaies is committed to bringing the voice of the people to the world stage. He'll select topics, but your voice will be the focus. So take time to spend with him and inform the world of your views. We can no longer sit back and let others tell us what to think. The cost of being a silent majority is too great, and too many lives are being destroyed. The leaders around the world need to be put on notice that their jobs and careers depend on how well they listen. Call in on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 657-383-0309, or Thursdays, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 347-855-8867, or Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 657-383-0309. Why don't you add Thoughts, Love, and Reflections to your weekly schedule? If you have story ideas or topics of discussion, contact James Deshaies at 407-394-9819 or email djames82@aol.com.
USI never had it so good. 101.1 radio, the best R&B and hip hop music. The Quiet Storm every Friday and Saturday. Talk radio with the best host in the business. Sports talk radio every weekend night with Princess Cooper. Never had it so good radio now on 101.1, and it's 24/7. The world's best radio station.
This is your host, James T. Deshaies, of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. As a show, you know that we never try to avoid difficult subjects. And today we're going to discuss and talk about domestic violence. And though I have never been involved directly with domestic violence, I do know what it's like to be a child in a home where domestic violence takes place. And as I read up on domestic violence, it just hurt my spirit so much, because to know that 33%, a third of women, have endured domestic violence, and that there's a woman that's being beaten every 15 seconds, it just seems so horrific that a treasure of our society, the blessing that we've been blessed with through our Creator, has to go through that kind of situation and deal with those kind of issues. And so I know that a lot of times we've been told that men who participate in domestic violence grew up in homes where there was domestic violence. I want you to know that sometimes children realize and recognize the evil that exists in those behaviors of those type men, and they refuse to go in that direction. I know that that's the case with me, that I just couldn't, after enduring some of the incidents that happened in my home, in my mother and father's home, I just thank God when my parents got a divorce, and I realized that they were the greatest parents as individuals. I had a great mother and I had a great father, but they were just not prepared to deal with the issues collectively as husband and wife. And so we're going to talk today a little bit about that. And we have with us Ann Bell, who is going to assist me in this discussion related to domestic violence. Ms. Bell, are you there?
I am. Thank you so very much for inviting me on this evening.
Ms. Bell, will you please give our audience some background in about, you know, yourself and why you feel so strongly about this issue?
Well, thank you. Again, I'm Minister Annie Bell, and I am a survivor of child sexual abuse, but abuse of any kind is very traumatic. And so as I began to hold the banner and become a voice for those who are the vulnerable people within our population, I also found that women and some men, I'm not going to just say it's women, just only women, but there are some men who are abused as well, but the majority are women who are going through abuse and have to go through battered person syndrome or battered woman syndrome. And there's something to be said about that as vulnerable population. You know, the Bible speaks about women and children being those who need to be protected and cared for. And those are the very people in the population who the enemy is enacting its abuse through our men or our spouses. And so I decided that I want to speak about that too and be a voice for those who may not be able to speak out. So I added that under our repertoire of abuse. And since this month is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, thought this would be a great opportunity, even for in my show, Irene Blog Talk Radio Show, that we talk about this epidemic that is so far reaching and affecting so many people at one time.
Let me ask you this, and it's kind of a little off the road, but I think it has a relationship. Why do you think that domestic violence is so mainstream? Even in the fact that we haven't been told that Donald Trump has ever beat anybody, but the fact that he has openly talked about assaulting women, how is it that even successful men have an inability to understand the ugliness that they perpetrate on women, no matter economics, no matter their status? Why is it so prevalent in our society?
Yeah. It's very pervasive, and I believe it stems from, and this is my own belief, so and I do have some, you know, background to back it up, but I believe it stems from the misinterpretation of the Bible. When we read the Bible, initially it talks, especially in the Old Testament, it talks about how women, you know, they have no voice, they have no power, they have to follow behind the men. And even if a woman's husband dies, the widow is almost destitute, and their children, any livestock, any land, or anything that was owned in the husband's name. And so we weren't. And I believe so they misinterpret the Bible as to say, okay, well, women must be then lower than men. And so they have to be treated like property. And so where that's not what the Bible says. I mean, you know, it says very specifically in the Bible that husbands love your wives as Christ loved the church. And so you don't see that paradigm, but you do see a pervasiveness of women being oppressed. And if you look across globally, you see that most countries see women as the weaker, you know, one. And so I believe that carried on through the years, carried on through generations. And now I am not a feminist, you know, by the definition of a feminist, but I truly believe that we as women are, like you said, gems, that God created us one step above the dirt. You know, he created Adam first from the clay of the ground, but the women he pulled out of the rib cage. And so I always say God loved us so much that he, you know, pulled us out of the man's body instead of out of the ground. And he made sure that we were presented in a beautiful way. And that's why you see some of the matrimonial ceremonies done in such a way where it honors the wife, the bride-to-be. But again, like I said, I believe it's the misinterpretation of being applied to women, that has allowed for such pervasiveness through the time. And like you said, across all demographics, it's not just about those who are in poverty, those who are in foreign land, you know, it goes on. As far as Donald Trump, you know, he has the privilege, I believe, he is taking the white privilege or the wealth privilege and feels he can do whatever he wants to do and feel that he can get away with it. And that's what he even says, said on that tape, that, you know, he can get away with it because he's a superstar and he's rich. So I think it's a culmination of all that.
And one of the things, you know, I'm a math major, so a lot of things have to be logical and make sense to me. And I just can't understand how a man could feel protected or not feel at risk when a woman does so much for him. I mean, that here's a woman who you have to sleep next to when you're at your vulnerable. Here's a woman who cooks your meals, and yet you want to batter them, which would bring out all type of hatred within anybody if they were the one at the mercy of your evilness, and you feel comfortable being, I just could not imagine being comfortable around anyone that I had treated incorrectly. So it amazes me that there's so many men or women who find it easy to be around people that they've treated in such a fashion.
And I think a lot has to do with the control. They believe that they can control that person to the point where they won't act out, and that they've put the fear in them enough where they won't tell the police or try to hurt them. But as you've seen in the burning bed and some, you know, heard in the news, there are women who do protect themselves. But the majority of the women fall prey, and they stay in the relationship and become submissive. They themselves, and that's what the battered woman syndrome, it becomes a mental disorder if they stay in it long enough. And so there is a sense of control that the man can have. Same thing with a woman, a female abuser. Their husbands can also feel a sense of hopelessness and helplessness, and so they allow certain things to happen. The more things they allow, the more the abuser will continue. And so, and you're right, I wouldn't feel safe sleeping next to a person that I've just kicked under the refrigerator and, you know, banged their forehead. I mean, you hear about some just atrocities. There was one in Greenwich Village that made the national news because not only did he abuse his wife, but he abused a child that a friend of his was supposed to adopt, but it didn't go well. And that was in the, early 80s. And he would make her strip naked and lay on the floor to sleep while he slept on the comfortable bed. If he got mad about anything, he would just completely take it out on her. He had broken her pelvis, broken her nose several times to the point where it wouldn't even stay up anymore. The cartilage just collapsed. So he felt strong enough and in control enough to do whatever he wanted to do. The laws had a lot to do with it as well, because they would protect the man. They would protect the abuser back in the day. And so a lot of the things that has happened with the women's liberation is to bring change to that, to say that it's not okay to beat the woman. And, you know, do I think that the laws are stern enough? I think it needs to be a little bit more harsh, but the laws also was more, you know, gender oriented as well, where they would give more leniency to the man and say, oh, well, I understand you lost your job, and so you have to take it out on your wife. Okay, all right, I'm going to give you some leniency. So I think, you know, again, a culmination, not just one thing is the answer. I believe it's a culmination of so many things.
Well, let me ask you this, because we know that domestic violence is pervasive, and now it has gone from to include boyfriend and girlfriend. It's gone from adults to children, teenagers. Why and where is it created? You mentioned church, but we're talking about teenagers who don't even know enough about the Bible to make those interpretations. So where do they get this inner spirit that makes them feel that they're entitled to beat on girls who are not even their wives, who have, they want to run dominion over these women?
Okay, and I want to clarify, I didn't say the church, I said misinterpretation of the Bible. That has grown, that misinterpretation has flowed into our mainstream society. You see again, manyfold to that question. One, that if a child witnesses anger issues and sees that they're and watches their mother being, pummeled by their father, and she is scared and is in fear, and that child may believe that that's the norm. Same thing with the girl. If it's a daughter who is watching this, they will become more complacent towards being in an abusive relationship. They also may even in turn feel that that is what love is. That's just what marriage is. You have to endure that type of pain. The boy may believe that that is how you handle your woman. That is how you make sure that they do what is supposed to be done. That they're just mirroring what they see in their home. And I believe it's set three times more likely that children of domestic violence will repeat the cycle in adulthood. So, like I said, whether it's a boy or a girl, they will repeat it. And also, 74% of children that come out of domestic violent homes will commit a violent crime against someone else. And so, for these statistics, you can look up Childhood Domestic Violence Association, and that's where I'm getting my information from. But that, that supports that belief. So the other thing is children who are not taught how to resolve anger, resolve conflict, a lot of times they grow up with that frustration, and so they do have anger issues. Boys tend to be more physical just by nature. They're more physical, they use strength. Whereas girls may internalize it more. And so, again, they become more, there's a more propensity for them to become a victim than a victimizer. And so I believe that's what you see is happening there, because, yes, I've heard of 14-year-old boys beating on their girlfriends, and I'm thinking, what in the world, makes them think that that is all right? And so that's what my research has led to.
I hear you saying that, and my position is from a position of being involved. I used to know when I used to go to bed, and if my father wasn't home when I went to sleep, I just knew something was going to happen, because the later he came home, the more apt there was going to be a situation. And so as a child, I just dreaded, and I could sense and knew that there was going to be something going on when he didn't come home in an appropriate time. And then when it finally all came to a head and he left, I was so happy. But internally, I think I decided at that point that I wasn't going to let that be a part of my spirit. But sometimes I question whether maybe that's why I've experienced being married twice but never becoming violent. But maybe the ability to stick or get involved in a troublesome relationship, it made it easier for me to walk away from, because I didn't want to be involved in any of the stuff that comes with trying to fight through obstacles. So I don't know how it, you know, I'm sure it manifested itself in me some kind of way to be involved or see those kinds of things happening. When you see one human being at the mercy of another, and that they have every right. I mean, a woman has every right to display her unhappiness with the behavior of her spouse if he's doing something that is against what the union is supposed to be about. In most cases, these men are doing things they know they shouldn't be doing, but they don't want to be held accountable for their behaviors, and they're actually not so much mad about they're mad about somebody bringing it to their attention and not allowing them to have the free will to do whatever it is they didn't want to do.
Yes, right. You know, a couple things, because you said a mouthful, and so a couple things. One, children who experience domestic violence in their home most likely can be diagnosed with having post-traumatic stress disorder. People know it as PTSD, because it's traumatic. It's a breach that occurs within the child's understanding and what they believe is supposed to happen. And so it affects, and when trauma happens, it affects the development of certain systems within their brain. If it happens on a regular basis, it's stress for the child. And so, you know, we have a built-in system. It's called the fight or flight system, where if we are in a stressful situation, our brain and our bodies move into either producing the adrenaline, and either they're going to fight in that situation or they're going to run. And so the adrenaline and all of that has to be made. Now, if that adrenaline is constantly being produced in the body because of the child being in constant stress, okay, every day worrying, okay, is my dad, what kind of mood is he going to be in? You know, what kind of mood is my mom going to be in? Are they going to fight? Are they going to, you know, who's going to go to the hospital? That is very traumatic for a child. And so it could actually impede proper development. And so our coping mechanisms or survival skills, survival responses are then impeded. So there is a study called the ACE research, which is Adverse Childhood Experience. And in that report, it talks about people who are considered as being involved in a traumatic experience, and one of them is domestic violence. There is a higher propensity for those children to then become, because of their the way they had to cope and survive in that situation, they have to whether it's negative or positive, they have to cope. And depending on personalities and environmental things and traditions and the way that we are raised and the culture that we're in, it creates, some people cope with things differently than others, okay? But everybody has to cope. You may have coped in a way where you're more detached. And so you're able, you know, it was easier for you to leave than it was for you to hit her, because you know the pain that your mother went through. You know how it affected her. And so the way that however you were created and all of the personalities and things, you know, components that made you who you are, you decided, hey, instead of fighting, I am going to leave. And, you know, some people, whether that's a good coping mechanism or a bad one, it's a coping mechanism, okay? I tend to think that that's more of a positive coping mechanism, because you're not doing bodily harm to anyone, but, you know, it has a negative impact. Because you actually had to have had some counseling or some therapy to be able to resolve those issues. If there those issues that you had as a child, resolve that trauma. If you don't get it resolved, then it does kind of open up. And in the ACE study, it talks about that. It talks about those who go through traumatic experiences, their life span is reduced by 20 years if it's not resolved. Okay. Once it's resolved, though, you can get some of that back. But if it's not resolved, then 20 years of that child's lifespan has just been decreased. There's also the propensity of them acting out more, taking more risk, doing more risky behaviors, drug abuse, prostitution for the girls, even for the boys, and having multiple sex partners. They even found that there is physical adult diseases that those who have unresolved trauma will have: diabetes, obesity, heart conditions. So this ACE research has really opened up what, you know, most survivors have really been thinking deep inside. Like, I think that the impact of the abuse and the trauma was more severe than just what happened at that moment. I think it carried on further. And I'm a prime example. I am 105 pounds, but I have diabetes. Nobody can figure out why. You know, my mother doesn't have diabetes. My grandmother, she had diabetes once she got in her 70s, mid-70s is when they diagnosed her with having diabetes. But before that, you know, healthy. So that's one of the things that they were saying, that, hey, because of the abuse that you went through, it may be the reason why you have diabetes. So that's my long answer for your comment.
Well, we're going to take a short break. We got a couple of callers on with us, and I'm going to take a short break right now, and then we'll come back and get some of their questions or their statements related to domestic violence. Talking about the impact domestic violence has on the family, on children, and on our society. And I never knew how pervasive it was in our society that every 15 minutes there is a woman who is being beaten or abused, verbally abused by her spouse or boyfriend or some male person in her family. And I just can't begin to understand the devastation that can have in somebody's spirit and why so many men find it necessary to participate in that kind of behavior. We have a few people on the line, and we're going to ask them if they have a statement to make or they have a question for Ms. Bell. We're going to go to one of our regulars who is very supportive of the show. Kathy, what are your thoughts today about what you've heard the first part of our show?
Very informational, but very saddening as well. So, I mean, I'm glad that she gave out some of the signs. So, you know, when you interact, as I do, you know, I interact with a lot of kids, and some of those signs will be stuck in the back of my head. So in the event that something does come up, I'll be able to put a stick pin in it and discuss it with some of the other members, and also maybe have some kind of consultation with the parents to see, you know, if there is something actually going on in the household.
Ms. Bell, let me ask you this. Shouldn't we be somehow helping students when we get kids? And I know we're always putting, I'm a teacher and I've been a teacher for over 30 years, and I'm always asking or saying that we need to have some kind of humanities class or behavior, what was humane behavior taught in school. But don't we have an obligation as a school system to try to help young people learn what is appropriate ways to interact with each other and deal with their emotions related to relationships without harming one another?
Yes, I believe that. I know we put a lot of demand on the school. I understand that we do. But I've just learned that in Virginia, they are starting to teach in elementary school about anal sex and homosexuality, and that it is a mandate that if they don't teach it, that they will lose federal funds. Now, if you, as the school, can teach that, then certainly you can teach about what abuse looks like and how to prevent it for yourself or find ways to get rescued and get help. But they won't teach that kind of stuff because they said that it's overstepping their bounds. But again, that's in direct conflict, because if you're going to teach about this other things, about anal sex and stuff like that at elementary school, certainly you can teach about how to relate to one another, anger management, what to do if you are in a conflict. That needs to be taught throughout. I'm also a big proponent of children at an early age learning about themselves. We put a lot of pressure and stress on our students to learn subjects, math and, you know, social studies and all that. That's very important. But we're also expected to know what we want to be as soon as we graduate high school. Well, we need to teach our students how to learn about themselves and maybe take some personality assessments at a young age as well, because then it also brings self-esteem. You know, when we know who we are and whose we are and better able to then defend who we are, then I believe that gives a sense of esteem, builds esteem and correctly for the individual. I did not know what I wanted to do when I grew up. I knew I wanted to own my own business, and I know I did not want to work for anybody. But because our school system is so traditional, you know, teacher, you know, mathematician, scientist, lawyer, if you don't fall squarely within those traditional, more traditional professions, they act like they can't really help you because it's more alternative. So I believe our schools need to be a little bit better at helping the students be equipped with the tools. And I say that, I say this about the personality assessments, because again, if you know, if your self-esteem is higher, there is a decreased possibility of you being abused. Now, most of predators, whether it be would-be husbands, would-be suitors, okay, or whether it be pedophiles roaming the street, they're looking for a certain type. They're looking for a certain mannerism that will give them the cue that, okay, this person lacks self-esteem. They, you know, they look like they are nervous and scared and skittish. They look down on the ground when they walk. They their families don't treat them well, you know, because again, a lot of the predators, they know the victim, okay? And so they're looking for a certain type of person. And so if we teach at a young age and build self-esteem and build self-awareness, again, not to go into narcissism, but to know thyself, then I believe it will lessen the amount of incidences of abuse. So yes, I am in agreement with you that more needs to be taught about relating with one another, you know, as humans.
All right. Joyce, do you have a statement or question for Ms. Bell?
Hello, Ms. Bell. This is very interesting to me. I'm very interesting. And I agree with everything you say. And to me, I'm learning some new things because I've never been in a situation where I never could understand why a person would stay in a situation. And from some of the things that you're saying, I can understand for that reason. I do believe that self-esteem is key. Feeling good
yes.
about, like you say, who you are. You got to know who you are. You got to feel good about yourself, because a lot of times
yes.
I think situations happen like that because they're wanting that okay from someone else. But if you're comfortable
mm-hmm.
with in your skin, you can you cannot let no one conquer your emotions, your feelings, to make you feel less than who you are. I saw in the news the other day where this one gentleman they had on Good Morning America, and I had to record it because the next time that our family get together, I definitely would like to play that on the tablet, send it in an email format. It's a black man telling his daughter about how she is. I am somebody. You are beautiful. I love this. It's a saying that they do every day. That's instilling that positive into that person. I don't think we have enough of that at home, where when we go out in the world like that, we were reaching and searching for things that it should be, I think, established in the household as to how important you are, who you are, what you're all about. I guess I was raised, my dad, we had six girls, three boys. Very independent, very, very independent as to who we are, our blueprint, who you are, what you represent. So I look at what our young people are looking at nowadays. They look at so much balance because they're into
mm-hmm.
so much balance with their videos. We always play hopscotch. Things like that, but certain things are with they want to hear action, they want to see fire, they want to hear sounds and beat up, and then too, just how we address part of the respect. Now, I was always taught that when someone speaks up high, you speak low, you bring them down. I mean, you disencharge that that type of emotion, but we have to teach our kids how to do that, what to look for, how to talk, and I don't like how you make me feel. We have to express those type of things and don't be afraid to say that to our counterpart. I just love what you said today. It's so educational because I don't know what the solution is, but I just those are some of the things that I think that I see that could help.
One of the things that I think of in terms of education is the point that education, the reason why we spend so much money in education is because when you educate your society, you put the world in a better place. I mean, we want intelligent people in America, so we invest in education. So seemingly to me, if you want people who don't hurt one another, and who don't put a burden on our criminal institutions or our jails, then you need to have some intervention, whereas to intervene in their lives in a way that you help them to avoid becoming combative. And so as much as you might want to make sure that people are tolerant of each other's sexual desires or their sexual proponent, if I'm saying that right, we should be concerned about how they impact society based on how they handle their anger. Audrey, I see that you're out there. What are your thoughts about what you're hearing?
Well, I regret that I didn't hear the whole story, but what I have heard is just wonderful, and I'm sure you touched on it, that there's different forms of domestic violence. And while this month is often recognized for breast cancer awareness, is also domestic violence awareness. And I'm just glad to see some of the churches taking part of making sure that they bring that to the forefront, because it requires a person having the strength to speak up. And as I heard Joyce mention, the importance of having self-confidence and the role that the family plays in building and instilling that confidence and that pride and truly that expectation, because if indeed we don't put the expectation out there, our children don't have a goal to actually work toward. But when faced with that situation, it really takes strength of knowing that there's truly help there. And over time, you know, just know that the Lord has a good plan for you, and you will be able to be in a position really better than what you are in now, because if a person is demonstrating a violent behavior, it's surely not love. And the Lord wants us to be around love and be surrounded with love. So that next life of knowing, you know, who you are for yourself, knowing yourself enough to love who you are, those are all powerful statements. And, again, I thank you for bringing this to the forum today.
I'm sorry.
I just wanted to piggyback on what she said about the churches, because it's so very important. Again, when we're talking about the church, they're inside the church, marriages within the church, 1 in 4 marriages experience domestic violence. And oftentimes we don't think about that, because we're thinking, okay, they are Christians, and so they shouldn't be beating up on one another. But because of the fundamentalistic views, the more the fundamental Baptist, and where the woman is subservient to the man, and the man is the priest of the home and is the power of the home, again, misinterpretation of the word of God, because a man was only placed there not to power over the woman. A true man will guide his wife to the destiny that God has intended for her. And so she's not to outshine him, and he's not to outshine her, but together it should make a sweet melody together in that marriage and raise up the children. And so, but what we find is, because of the different doctrinal understanding and misinterpretation, the woman is most times, especially in the churches, are more abused along with the Bible. I mean, they're using the Bible to justify their actions. And I know one lady who I interviewed on my radio show, she said her husband would quote the Bible as he raped her. He would quote the Bible as he beat her. He would quote the Bible while he was jabbing a mop in her vagina. So this woman, really could have had an aversion to the Word of God, because he would quote the scripture while he was truly battering her. So I just wanted to make sure that we know it's very important that the churches and from the pulpit we are saying this is not correct behavior. We don't condone abuse of children or spouses. And they have to preach it more than once every 5 years. It really, truly has to come from the pulpit more than that.
And one of the sad things about this is that you have two people who are placing their lives in jeopardy. When I served as a teacher at the jail and I helped inmates get their GED, there were a lot of men who came up against women who were no longer going to take their abuse, who found themselves locked up. And depending on what degree that they beat these women, their freedom was going to be taken away for a long, long time. So not only are we, when we teach young people or start at a young age, we're trying to help rid them of these propensities, we're helping our boys not become a part of the criminal system. You cannot beat anybody into submission. You cannot make anybody love you. One of the things I believe, we are taught that love conquers all, but if you don't have somebody in that relationship with you who is committed to the long-term success of the relationship and they're determined that they want to leave, you beating them or hurting them is not going to make them come to the same conclusion that you have related to that relationship. And you have to then decide that, no, I'm going to leave. I'll have to find someone else. One of my thoughts when I talk to some of the inmates, some of them would tell me, Mr. Deshay, she don't believe I love her unless I hit her. And I think, I'm not going to let anybody make me reduce myself to violence, because that's the only thing they appreciate or know. And so if I'm a victim of someone's verbal abuse and they're verbally abusing me to make me have a reaction, my reaction is, I'm not going to allow you to make me go there with you. And so I don't care if it's the woman or the man, once you identify that you're in a relationship that is toxic to your existence, you need to find some way to get out of it.
That's right. That's right. And like you said, the woman, the female, her interpretation of love is associated with that rage and that passion, or that not good passion, negative passion, and that type of abuse. Because a lot of times the girls are associating with what they saw and what they witnessed in the home. The father is truly, the father is supposed to be the one that validates the children. His role in the family is so very, very important. And so we have to teach our men, the older men as well as the younger men, we got to burn that candle on both ends to teach them what their role is as males in the society, and how they impact and affect us all. And so that they will, we can rid of this dysfunction, because there's so much going on that's being repeated and, sent along generationally, that we have to burn the candle from both ends. If the father does not validate their daughter at a young age, they will grow up misunderstanding of how they should be treated. One last thing I do want to add, as far as the youth are concerned, the pornography is also playing a huge role in how they understand sex. So they see, and because most of the pornographic movies, it's the man who is dominant normally. And so you see the man, you know, putting the female in very, you know, submissive positions as they take control. And so the boys begin to act that out to their girlfriends. And the girlfriends, seeing that, feel that they have to be submissive. They don't get to have the sexual gratification. They also cannot relate to what love, how love plays a role in sex. They are only seeing the sexual gratification that the male receives. Now, there are some other pornographies out there that shows a different side, but it's always only about sexual gratification. They're not showing the passion and the love that is within a relationship. And so, it again, that's another element that skews our children's perspective. So I wanted to make sure I added that in there as part. And I don't know if later you were going to give me time to give some information about how to get out of that situation and some places to contact. I hope that I will be, you know, be able to get some of that information out.
We will. We'll make sure that happens. Kathy, your thoughts and your concerns about whether schools or churches doing what they need to be doing in order to help both men and women avoid these situations.
Now, I do know that certain different churches have groups that meet. I don't know if it's strictly on domestic violence, but it needs to happen in every church. There needs to be something set up where whatever day of the week it is, where people come together and talk about this issue, how it could be changed, and how we can help as a people, because we're supposed to be the ones that everyone run to, and it's like they're running from us instead of to us.
Yes. And pastors have to stop telling the victim to go back home and work it out. Sometimes that is not the answer. Many women who leave the home to allow the thing, you know, to allow the tension to go down and come back, there is a higher rate of fatality. And so, you know, I believe that pastors, yes, are there to help restore, but there has to be some steps taken to ensure that the husband is has gone through some therapy, gotten some counseling before you just tell the woman to go back after he's calmed down. Because again, you find higher rates of fatality when they return back to the home. So I believe pastors need to be trained, because we're coming to our pastors to talk about it. You know, I had a person, an apostle, on my show last week who herself was a survivor. And she said her pastors kept telling her to go back home. And when she left, she had to run away with just the clothes on her back and her kids under her arms, because he was about to kill her that night.
And, you know, I believe some fathers step up as well. I know that I have – one of the things I always made sure my daughter understood was that she could always come back home. Now, she couldn't bring nobody back home with her, but she could always come back home. And that was only one thing I required. I wasn't the kind of father who got involved in who she was dating and got all into their business. But one of the things I told her that was required – is that her husband not put his hands on her, and he had to keep the lights on. Now, if he couldn't do them two things, then she needed to come home. You know, because if he can't afford or provide for her financially, then I can. And he was not going to be hitting on her as an adult. You know, and so those are the kind of things that I made sure she understood was the door for home was always open. It wasn't open to her husband, but it was open to her, you know. So that was one of the things I made, you know, and I don't know if that's right or wrong, but that's just the way I did it. Joyce, you have any additional thoughts you'd like to share with us today?
I agree with you. Share to my husband when he met him, and he told me, said that to my husband, I never cussed at her. He said, now I can tell you about my daughter. You know, she's a spitfire. She's gonna be, you know. But when you get to the point where you two can't get along, he said, send her on back to me. And that's what my dad has always said. But it's just communication too. Sometimes you look to the church, and I've been watching this movie Greenleaf. So sometimes there are problems in the church too. So you know that's a turn me off also. So you know it's just hard. It's no solution. I don't know to my knowledge. I would like to hear what the lady has to say as far as the solution and how we can get out of this situation healthy and feeling good about themselves.
RJ, what's your thoughts about what you've heard additional to that? You know, and what role do we play in making sure that our children don't face those kind of issues, both our sons and daughters?
It's about communicating. It's about discussion. It's about putting expectations out there. It's about role modeling. Children will often listen to you, yes, but it's more important to see that action. And like you say, the fathers in a home are key in identifying what the expectations are for their daughters as well as their sons. And their mothers are the same as to how they're being treated and seen interacting with the husband in front of their children. So when we talk about marriage being ordained in the family, everyone having a role to play, that's the key piece. And I think it boils down to the communication and the behaviors being demonstrated. Now, again, when we run into the issue where there is a problem, I agree there are steps in which are required in which it has to take place. So I agree with Joyce. I look forward to our guest speaker today giving us those steps and ways to ensure that we can help a person to get out and get out healthy and safe.
Well, Ms. Bell, since everyone's asking that, why don't you go into that area? What ways do a woman prepare herself, or should she just leave, or is there some preparation she should make in order to make it the most successful for her?
Yes. It's called a safety planning. And there are ways, if you're in a situation where you have time to plan, then do so. But if you are in a situation where it's life and death, like I had said about the apostle who had to run out with just the clothes on her back, then do so. Okay. There are places, there are organizations that are out there who will take you and your children in, but their resources are limited. And of course, not the best situation bedding wise. You might be in a room or a house full of other women who are, you know, running away from abusive situations with their children. So it may not be the best scenario. But one thing I want to give out is called the National Domestic Violence Hotline. And if that's too long, just Google it. Help for domestic violence victims. Okay. The number is 1-800-799-7233. Also, the TTY number for those who may not be able to hear is 1-800-787-3224. Another organization is called Advocates for Human Rights. Wonderful information on there as well. Now, what they will the National Domestic Violence Hotline will actually help you in creating a safety plan that is specific to your situation. So whether it's you are trying to leave, if you have children, if you're pregnant, even if you have a pet, they are going to try to make sure that they make a plan for you that's going to work for your situation.
And when you're doing this, should you be bringing other people into your confidence as your should that be somebody you're talking to, or should you do it without talking to anybody and just keeping private what your plans are so that no one else knows where you might be going or what you might be doing?
And that falls in the need-to-know category. Those who need to know, you might have to tell. But until you are safely out, I wouldn't tell anyone because you don't know where the loyalties actually lie when certain things like this happen. One last thing I do want to say is those who are Googling this information from your home where the violence is happening, please make sure you delete all of the cookies and wipe it clean so that the abuser or the aggressor cannot find out what you've been looking up online, because there's been many incidences where the planning, the safety planning went awry because they found out what the wife was planning.
I have a couple of questions. As far as the planning is concerned, is that a short-term or long-term? And what that long-term time frame would be. And I thought I had heard of an app that unless you know what's behind it, it looks like it's a regular app. But in essence, it's a connection to the domestic violence. And I can't think of the female mm-hmm. that had that as an initiative. I want to say it's a Dr. Field's wife, McGraw, that had an app like that. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not. I've heard of that app as well, but I don't know exactly what that app is. But the safety planning, to answer the other question, is it can be long-term or it can be short-term. Really, though, the safety planning is to get you safely out and safely stayed out.
Immediately.
Because
So
because the propensity of the violence always escalating, especially and then going to a fatality issue when they return back home, most of the times the safety planning is to keep you out and get you independent so that you and your children can be safe for the rest of your lives. But if you just want to get out for an interim or just until he cools down or whatever, then they will still help you, but they're more geared to, severing ties. They even have safe houses where they will move the family through the different states and so that they can create a whole new identity. So it can get that in depth, because some of these abusers will try to locate them, find them, and then kill them. You know, a lot of times, again, 4,000 women a year are killed by the hands of their spouse or intimate partner. 4,000. So, during the time when they are out, there are also ways where they can get help. The abuser can get some help, get some therapy. But if that's not something that they're wanting to do, then they will help the woman to stay out.
Ms. Bell, what would you like to see the law or judges implement even more? We've seen situations where women have gotten injunctions for men to stay away, and that seemed to enrage them even more. What more can law enforcement do to make things safer for women and their children?
Well, as far as law enforcement, which is different than the judicial system, the law enforcement, I believe they're doing some great things. If they come to a house where there's domestic violence going on, they have to take the whoever the aggressor is, they have to take them in. And then that's following suit in many of the states. And so that's great. Also, if they actually witness the violence, even if the abusee, the victim, don't want to press charges, the police officer have the right to press the charges. So law enforcement, I think, has come a long way. They're taught to believe that the victimization is going on rather than, you know, siding with the, especially if it's a man, siding with the man that, hey, nothing, you know, oh, they're just having an argument, it's okay to leave. They're taking the warrants, seriously, and if a woman is filing an injunction and saying, hey, I don't feel safe, they are enacting on it. So if he does go across the line, then, you know, and breach that warrant, that injunction, they will make sure that he gets punished for that, or he or she. Judicially, I believe that once law enforcement has done their job and brought in the aggressor, the perpetrator, the punishment, I believe, has to be commensurate with and taken seriously with the amount of abuse that went on, because otherwise, to them, it is just a slap on the hand. It has to. I was reading the other day that a man got 1,500 years in jail, in prison, for raping his daughter for 4 years. He would rape her two or three times a week, and even on Christmas, he would rape her. And so I think that's commensurate, because for the victim, abuse is a lifetime sentence. And so it has to be commensurate for the perpetrator. But sadly, it is just a short sentence for the perpetrator. And so I believe it allows the perpetrator to continue, because, hey, that was not such a bad deal. 5 days in jail was not bad. 6 days or 6 years in jail is not bad. I'm going to come out and still do what I'm going to do. And I also believe while they are incarcerated, there has to be therapy, there has to be counseling and transitional skills given to the perpetrator. Don't just, you know, go in there, because they're going to be abused in jail, in prison. Don't just release them more dysfunctional than they were when they went in.
All right, let's take another short break, and then we'll be back to finish up the show and have our last words related to domestic violence. And I want to talk about, when we come back, state of domestic violence in the National Football League and what's going on with them, and whether or not what we see is fair or unfair. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
I want some company. You look like you're just my type. You're the kind whose spirits are running free. Let's take a sip of some cold wine and dance to the music nice and slow. Under any kind of pressure, you see, we'll just let the evening flow. Come on and go with me. I don't like that, baby. Come on over to my place. It would be so nice. It would be so good. Come on and go with me.
away. You want to get away from this noisy crowd. Let's go where it's nice and quiet, where there's nobody else around. Let's sit by a cozy lit fire, and we can be each other's company. Now how does that sound to you? You see, 'cause it sounds so good, it sounds so good to me.
Come on and go with me.
You do that, baby.
Come on over to my place.
Would you do that, baby? Would you do that, baby?
Domestic violence. We have a major situation going on in the NFL. Well, Josh Brown, a kicker for the New York Giants, only received a one-game suspension, and until it came out about how he even had a journal about how he abused his wife. They're now divorced. But in comparison, Ray Rice, who hit his fiance before they got married, never played again and lost his whole career, and has never been signed by another team. Do you feel as though, Ms. Bell, that is sending a message to the general public by the differences that races are being treated related to domestic violence?
Oh, sure. You know, we send messages daily, depending on how one perpetrator is brought to justice than the other, how one may receive so much probationary time and no jail time, whereas another may, you know. And I spoke earlier about white privilege, wealth privilege, there's even male privilege, these privileges that are extended to whoever has the ability to extend, and then whomever has those privileges by their side. You see that every day. And so I believe right there is an injustice, because it is saying that if you're a white male, you can beat on your woman. And that's what it's saying to me. But then again, continuing to push the envelope that black men are so bad.
Yeah, it's just incredible to me that, again, you know, domestic violence comes in a lot of different forms. And you had a player last year or the year before was a running back for the Minnesota Vikings who disciplined his child. And African-Americans are known to spank children. And yet he lost he was suspended for many games for doing something that is normal in the black community. But again, here you have treatment that is somehow different between African-Americans and whites. And we still don't know if, even after being caught, will the New York Giants do what is right. But I'm not even sure if he's been, as punishment, and I ask you, should they lose their whole careers over these incidents?
Now, me, and before I answer that question, I want to real quick, I found the app that I think it was RJ who asked about it. It's called Aspire News App, and it looks like just a news app, and you can go in there to the help section and get help if you are in a domestically violent situation, okay? That's Aspire
okay.
News App. But secondly, to what you're saying, I believe that, you know, the severity, I think each we can't just throw a huge blanket over it and say everybody just lose their life. Mm-hmm. I believe that, you know, we got to take every situation and see how extreme it is. If, you know, I don't want to justify losing a person's career because the man slapped his wife, but if a man has been beaten on his wife for years and she has, you know, damage to her body, you know, then, yeah, you know, so I think it's the severity of it that needs to be taken into consideration. You know, do I think it could escalate? Some escalate and some don't. Some men are able to get treatment and they're fine and they're good, productive citizens and good husbands and good fathers. I'm not saying that they're untreatable. But then you have situations where the person is not amiable towards any type of treatment, don't feel that there is a problem. And if they continue, yes, I believe that more than just a slap on the wrist, it has to be judicially handled, you know, not just the NFL punishing them, but I think the law needs to get involved. And however they, after hearing the case, however they decide, I think, you know, we would have to go with that. But again, we need to make sure our judicial system is also in place properly to give the proper, the commensurate punishment due for the severity of the situation.
All right, we're going to go to our callers and let them have some last words before we end our show. Joyce, what are your last words related to what you've heard so far today?
She just said, piggyback off of that, too, is that the laws are different to me for different races and different situations because I look at Bill Cosby, okay? I look at Bill Cosby. They're not putting no issue on that. They're trying to smother that. But to me, you are Bill Cosby number two. You know what I mean? But you,
yes.
They're not going to put it out there the way that they're trying to overlook it. Is, oh, that's what they do. No, 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 no. That's not what they're doing. He's no different
mm-hmm.
than Bill Cosby. And that's how I look
mm-hmm.
at that. And I agree with her. You know, it's two-sided. The system is two-sided. This guy, the NFL is supposed to be looking at it and checking into it, and he claims that once he get all the evidence, then he will be disciplining him accordingly. But I tell you what, you got to make sure that he come down harsh on him, because if not, then he's going to have a big issue, and particularly with the way that the situation about the misuse of women nowadays, that's what I have to say about that.
And just to piggyback off of what you said, Trump had, there's a case, an open case that he has to go to court for in December, where he is being accused of child rape. And that is being pushed under the rug like nobody's business. And so definitely something to look at as far as the different privileges that people receive.
Yeah. They have him coming out. What he's saying and how he does out of his own mouth. You don't hear
That's
Bill
right.
Cosby, but you hear him saying it. I mean, he's saying it. I mean, it doesn't get any real than that. You hear him saying
That's
it
right.
on tape, what he does and what he likes doing, you know. But Bill Cosby, they coming, but they haven't shown factual evidence no more than what he had admitted to. But this guy, you got him on tape, you got him on video. I mean, it doesn't get any real than that. But don't let
yeah.
them tell it's no big deal, and he plans to sue. So we'll see where that's going to go. This is our president, our future president, what they're trying to say. Unreal.
Unreal. That's a whole other can of worms, though, I'm going to tell you, because I could talk about that for about another hour and a half.
Well, we may have to go there. Kathy, what are your final words? Are you there, Kathy?
Hello? I was just going to say
Okay, go on, Kathy.
I was just going to say you probably need to have a second show so that we can gather more information and finish the discussion.
I believe you're right, Kathy. Even an hour and a half does not seem like it's enough. And I'm going to say I didn't even realize, as much as I have my ear to every news station there is, Ms. Bell, I did not hear about the revelation of a possible lawsuit regarding a underage individual. So, wow, that would be devastating if that was to come out over the airways in the next 2 weeks.
Well, it's out there, and the what I don't understand is the Trump supporters don't care about those allegations. And so if he is elected into presidency in November, in December, when he goes, he could, you know, be found guilty, and our president would go to prison for child rape. That is an embarrassment.
Wow.
That I don't even want to consider. You know, but you want to talk about this this woman who is running and want to, you know, call her a witch and all this other stuff. But you'll let this child alleged child rapist, but a man who has said, yeah, I grab women's, you know, who's and, you know, I just go and kiss them in the mouth. I don't care if they're married. I mean, they heard him say that. And like he said, I think it was RJ said, you know, Cosby has lost endorsements. He has. The people have retracted their honorary degrees. And I mean, just a litany of things happened to Cosby. And he hasn't yet confessed to anything. But here you have Donald Trump talking about it, sexually assaulting women, but that's okay. That makes no sense to me at all.
I think it has a lot to do with the level of hatred that has come up in our society since Barack Obama has become president. I think there's just a level of hatred and unhappiness related to white America, and not all white Americans, but a segment of white America who just feels like they will accept anything if it means that it will have a negative effect on people of color. So they're willing to accept all of his behavior if it means that he is going to disrupt the lives of people of color. And that's what they're trying
to
do. They would accept any of his behavior.
Right. A lot of hate groups are supporting Donald Trump. And the evangelicals even are supporting him because, you know, they feel that Hillary is this and that or whatever have you. But Donald Trump is not even a Christian. He had just professed a faith last month. But before that, he said some negative things about Jesus dying on the cross and him not having to go to God for forgiveness. I mean, those things are, again, okay for him to say, but here you have Hillary, who is a Methodist. Now, I'm not saying Hillary is the plan. I'm just saying that you have two people who are the conflict and the contradictions that are his supporters are giving for why not to vote for Hillary. It just makes no sense. This man is not a Christian. He exhibits no Christian-like characteristics, Christ-like characteristics, you know, and the things he says about Black Americans, Hispanics, women, he just runs the gamut. People want to support him because, like you said, they want to go completely on the other side of what everything that Obama represented.
Yeah, you're so right. It is just difficult to understand and believe as a country that we can't see the clear difference between these two individuals, and that we're just willing to accept his behavior as, you know, locker room. They want to make it locker room behavior. And the truth is told that this, like you said, this man had never professed being a Christian or any Christ-like behaviors until it came time to run for president. And then all of a sudden now he wants to be the man, the Christian, I guess, spokesman for Christianity at this stage. And when he said something like, well, you know, that's what I did 10 years ago, I tell people all the time that, you know, you can say I have changed my behavior from when I was 10 to when I was 20. That's acceptable to believe that, you know, there's some things that you would have changed in your thought patterns from 10 to 20. But from 60 to 70, whatever you believed at 60, you're going to believe that at 70, because that's been a major part of your life for a long time. That is not your recent belief. So if you've lived that for 60 years, it's hard for me to believe that you would have changed it over a 10-year period, especially when there are women still over that 10-year period, you were still doing and saying things that you were doing prior to being 60. So obviously, as Americans, we have some issues with white privilege. And again, when we're talking about women being assaulted by men who think they have the right because they either have fame or they have money.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I believe Jesus and I believe God can do and change a man in an instant. I do. But if you don't have Christ, if you're not professing Christ, you know, the probability of true change is hard. Like you said, if it's been 60 years that you've been doing this thing and then all of a sudden 10 years, you know, can you change that quickly? You know, it's hard to believe. It's hard to believe. But, you know, through God, all things are possible, through Christ.
All right, we've come to the end of an hour and a half show, and it has been an easy show to talk about. I mean, time goes so fast when you have a subject that is both meaningful and needed. And I want to thank all of you who called in to participate. I want to, again, ask that all of you visit my website, www.jamestdeshay.com. I want to ask you to all make this show a part of your schedule. We're on 7 days a week, Sunday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. So we're here every day, and we want to talk about the things that impact your world now and in the future. Thoughts, Love, and Reflection is a show that allows your voice to be heard loud and clear, and I look forward to hearing and talking with you all tomorrow at 6 p.m. Take care, and Ms. Bell, we look forward to you coming back. Kathy has already said and extended an invitation, said we need to have you back because there's so much for us to talk about. So we'll have to reschedule you again because it is obvious that there's some issues that need to be discussed. Take care, everybody, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
decided that you won't be.